Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Makwane Maja. It is extremely swelteringly hot in Cape Town where I am today, so I apologize if I seem like a lost man wandering through the desert, but nonetheless, I will try to make sense. I'm sure Makwane will be able to cover for me in that department, but let's get on to our first story, and that is the complete and total disaster that is Johannesburg's electricity company, City Power. So just for those who don't know or don't live in Joburg, the city of Johannesburg runs its electricity system through City Power, which is a wholly owned, essentially an SOE of the city, which is supposed to buy power from Eskom and then ensure that it gets to people's houses. And as anyone who has lived in Johannesburg knows, it's not that effective. But the level of just how ineffective it is quite staggering. So News24 has done a nice article just talking about the state of City Power because its CEO, Shifularo Mashaba, has recently resigned. She leaves behind a company that is in total collapse, it seems. So in the last 12 months, City Power has lost 4.3 billion rand. It has also, it is now, according to its own acknowledgements, reaching a high risk of insolvency. This is according to a performance report dated 30th of June, 2025. So in a couple of months, we'll get an update on this, but I suspect the situation will be not much better. The city has purchased around 3.4 billion rands worth of electricity from Eskom that it never managed to sell onto customers from that. The revenue shortfall from electricity sales is roughly 9.2 billion rand. The company's liabilities exceed its assets by 22 billion rand at the beginning of the 2024-2025 financial year, up from 1.1 billion in the previous reporting period. So City Power, according to its own report, says City Power can't cover 1 month's costs due to high overdraft. City Power's solvency ratio declined when compared to the budget. It is negative, and as such, the company is not financially healthy and at high risk of insolvency. The company continues to waste money in a variety of ways. Infamously, it spends 55 million rands on professional services to perform the work that its executives should be performing, such as managerial duties, putting together financial reports, organizing business practices, preparing cases for new departments, and other things like that. It's also alleged by journalists from News24 that the organization has the executives of the organization have placed their relatives up and down the entire sort of management chain, who are all drawing salaries, despite the fact that the company is supposed to have frozen hiring to try and protect its costs. There are also, again, senior leaders of City Power. There are arrest warrants that have not been served, and there are now even questions as to whether there has been interference in their case by members of the NPA. So, Makwane, it is just kind of staggering the level to which City Power seems to have fallen into dysfunction. I think it's been troubled for a long time, but in the last year, 2 years, the situation appears to now be critical. I mean, one might even go far as to clickbaitily say that the entity is doomed. What's your take on this one, and how did we get here?
Yo, Nick, I am fully convinced that when state-owned entities are created, more problems are introduced than are solved. And I think City Power is demonstrating that with all the problems that's plaguing it. The 4.3 billion rand losses a year, when you factor in the 3.4 billion worth of rands worth of electricity that was purchased and unsold, that's what 3/4 of those losses alone can be attributed to those losses of electricity purchased but not used. And so this is demonstrative of a company that clearly, or management rather, that clearly has no plan to resolve the problems that it has, including like inability to actually sell electricity, to collect revenue from the electricity that it sells, and would rather focus on planning business breakfast, because obviously that's a far much easier job. These are socialites, like pretending to be actual chief executive officers in some of the most key infrastructure companies in our country. It is devastating that this is happening in the city of Johannesburg, obviously, but unless things like patronage, you know, which our institutions are replete with mechanisms that ensure that patronage and favoritism of hiring friends and family or political allies in those institutions, until the institutions are rid of those machinations that are easily manipulated so that people who are way underqualified for the job are employed, until those mechanisms and machinations are identified and reformed, we will keep seeing state-owned entity after state-owned entity brought to its knees by, again, socialites pretending to be competent, capable CEOs. So it is a shame that this has happened to City Power. And in fact, I reflect on an incident that took place, I believe it was late last year, that we discussed here on the show, where City Power was sabotaging its own ability, or the municipality rather, was sabotaging the ability to sell electricity, where it had previously tried to ensure that every household had a meter in it so that, you know, people could only use the electricity that they bought. They then tried to reverse it because they realized they actually couldn't get money from people who had installed solar panels. So these are the sort of clowns that we're dealing with in these institutions, just people that have clearly no plan on how to reverse the decline within the city and within these institutions. And even worse, that when, you know, the NPA is meant to be investigating them, which this article alleges, it completely fumbles those investigations. And so we are excellent in our country, excellent at identifying when crime is taking place, at identifying the potential perpetrators of said crimes. But when it comes to actually law enforcement and consequence management, we're absent. And the fact that the CEO was even in a position to resign before they were fired, I mean, that should tell us everything. Yeah. There is,
and in fact, the board's report into the CEO leaving was saying she's left a solid foundation.
Imagine.
You know, which is just the complete opposite of the situation. Yeah, you know what? If you ever wanted to really understand what cater deployment does to an organization, this is a perfect example, because it's very difficult to look at this and not come away with the conclusion that everyone appointed to senior leadership positions here is appointed because they are politically loyal to the government. In this case, the sort of ANC, EFF, et cetera, coalition. And this is now, you know, sort of on such a scale that it's putting, I think, the entire city kind of at risk to a degree. So obviously the city's at risk because, you know, you need electricity to function properly, you need infrastructure to work, all that kind of thing. And as we know, City Power's infrastructure often breaks. It's often repaired, but very shoddily, and the people don't often have parts, and it's just sort of a constant ongoing problem. But with an enormous increase in liabilities and the enormous amount of loss occurring from the coffers of City Power, you know, the rest of the city is going to have to put up that loss there and basically cover it. And where they're going to get it from? We know that City Power's revenue collection is all over the place. Their billing system and the city's billing system is all kind of melted down. They often seem to have difficulty in issuing correct bills. I can't remember the exact percentage, but a very significant proportion, if not most, of the city's revenue comes from charging for services such as electricity. So if the electricity part is just losing so much money, you know, one wonders, where is Joburg going to be a year or 2 years from now if this financial situation doesn't turn around very quickly? Any more thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so glad that you mentioned that board report, that whilst all these allegations are being made about senior management in the organization, the board, which is clearly captured, comes out with raving, gloating reviews about, the CEO and co. So there clearly needs to be just a wholesale dismissal of a lot of these people, because even the board should definitely be found culpable for failing on its fiduciary duties. Because how can such losses be raked up in a matter of years? How can such failures pile on whilst the board fails to hold the executive accountable and instead finds them to be doing a perfectly good job?
Yeah, and this is according to the performance report, or City Power's own performance report. So it's like, well, we built a solid foundation, but also we're nearly insolvent. Anyway, just a horror show all along, and I'm sure it's going to come up more in the next couple of months as we see the fight over the local government elections. All right, let's move to another part of the state that's not doing so hot, and that is South Africa's prisons. In a question asked by an MK Party MP, the overcrowding numbers about how overcrowded South Africa's prisons are have been released by Freedom Front Minister Peter Cronewald. He said that South Africa's prisons have an occupancy level of 157%, meaning that they have an overcrowding level of 57%. The inmate population is 168,355, 105,000 sentenced offenders, and 62,000 unsentenced offenders, which is kind of a shocking number. I mean, that's sort of approximately ish a third of people in the prison system haven't actually been sentenced yet to time in prison. And this is against an approved bed space of 107,000. So if all those unsentenced inmates didn't get somehow either got moved somewhere else or didn't get sentenced, we'd have just about enough beds for the people in our prisons. But anyway, if you look at it per province, some provinces are much worse affected. The Eastern Cape has the biggest overcrowding problem at 184% occupancy. Gauteng and the Western Cape have 169% occupancy. And the least affected provinces are Limpopo and Mpumalanga, the Northwest. Sorry, the Northern Cape and the Free State, which have 126% occupancy. Minister Cronewald said in his response to this question, the efforts to address overcrowding correctional facilities therefore include reforms to improve the efficiency of the judicial system, addressing underlying socioeconomic factors, and promoting stability and good governance. Mokone, this is not an easy problem to solve, I think, because nobody wants to give prisoners more money, right? You say, look, we've got all these huge social problems, but don't worry, we're going to build a couple more prisons and we're going to improve the conditions in prisons so that prisoners aren't, having their rights abused, which I think is very clearly what happens to most South African prisoners in our prison system today. And, considering all the problems we have in this country, I think most people are going to go, what, are you crazy? No, let them rot. They committed crimes. It's their fault. But I do think that we kind of there's almost the while prisons certainly I think have a deterrent effect in their current state, they don't ever there's very little chance of reform, and you're also going to have people who go into the prison system and just come out as a hardened criminal, because they may have gone in for something relatively minor, maybe some kind of theft or something, and by the time they leave the prison they're in a gang, or they've murdered someone, or they've been recruited into a more high stakes thieving ring. So it is a real problem. But it also is compounded by the fact that our courts are just so overburdened. And you kind of get the sense that the entire law and order system from start to finish has all these gaping holes in it. We've got lack of capacity in the police. We've got criminal infiltration and corruption of the highest levels of the police. We've got the courts that are overburdened, overworked, that it's difficult to get cases out the door, that there's just delays and delays, and you have to wait forever for court cases. And then finally, you get to the end of the line, the prison system, and everything is overcrowded, everything is chaotic, And there's now, you know, all sorts of ideas about how we could possibly in the short term change this problem. Makone, what's your take on all this?
Yeah, I think this is a symptom of our entire justice system, from policing to prosecutions to courts to prisons. It's just heavily undercapacitated. And as you're saying, it's not a sexy line item in our budget, you know, to say, oh, we're going to give the Correctional Services Department more money so that more prisons are built, because it will take years before you actually make a dent in crime statistics or reforming the behavior of prisoners if you do actually allow them to spend a bit more time in prison so that actual transformation and restoration takes place. And this premise of our justice system, that it's not premised on punishment but on restorative justice, definitely needs to be relooked and readdressed. I mean, sure, let's not punish the perpetrators of the crime, but let the whole of South African society suffer as a result. Because I was just looking into recidivism rates to see what sort of effects overcrowding and imprisonment has on South African society, right? Because of if our prisons are overcrowded, then the courts have a duty to keep and limit that overcrowding even further. And even the Minister of Correctional Services came out and said they have a strategy, an overcrowding reform strategy. And one of the things on that strategy is to limit excessive bails during bail applications, so that I guess people don't actually have to go to prison. But back to our recidivism rates, I found a statistic that says they range from between 55% to 97%, which seems like a broad range, but I think it's because of the different categories of crime. At the high reoffending rates, it's estimated at between 80% to 97%. So 8 out of 10 of people possibly have a high chance of going back to prison after coming out. And even like some of the flimsiness of our bail applications. I'm always shocked whenever you hear of somebody who has an arm long criminal record, but you know, when it's time for a bail hearing, these people are let off so easily, again, because the judges have a duty to balance all of these factors. But it comes at the cost of ordinary South Africans, law-abiding South Africans, who ultimately pay the price for the number of prisoners who are let back out on the streets. But I absolutely agree that we can identify all the problems, but when it comes to solving them, if there's no commitment, a financial commitment to actually reforming some of these areas, we will be found wanting. And unlike the courts, which I think we've seen how, you know, certain cases or certain cases have drawn such ire from the community, that the courts have found arenas outside of a formal court setting to adjudicate those cases, like a community hall, right? Like you can make alternatives with regards to courts. It's not so easy. It's not so simple when it comes to actually housing inmates. So it really is a complex problem that requires, first of all, financial commitment from the government to building more prisons. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
I think also what's key is just making sure that, you know, the authorities have control in the prisons. As we know, there's very often, you know, sort of smuggling, and guards are often in many prisons taking bribes, and gangs have enormous amounts of influence. And, you know, while that makes prisons more horrible for the prisoners, it kind of undermines the entire idea of, you know, sort of what are we trying to do here? We need to, you know, we're sort of almost going through the motion of having prisons. The fact that there's just so many people in our prisons who haven't even been sentenced yet is also just crazy to me. You know, it's sort of like it all seems backwards. But ideally, we should have enough space. And also, if you have, you know, more or less overcrowding, it's easier for guards who have proper oversight. And of course, that's another thing that you need to actually make sure there isn't corruption or abuses or that kind of thing, to keep control of things. But, you know, if there's not enough guards and there's way too many people, you're not going to be able to control a damn thing. And who fills that vacuum? Well, it's gangs, it's criminal syndicates, that sort of thing, who just use prisons to recruit. And I suspect that's why some of those recidivism rates are so high. Because, you know, this is just a sort of temporary warehouse where you go to upgrade to the next level of criminal if you make it out alive. And that's exactly the opposite of what the prisons should be doing. They should be a place to, you know, keep people off the streets and hopefully sort of reconstruct them and allow them to re-enter society as a changed person. And that's just not happening right now. A difficult thing, but once again, I think that so many of the, you know, the bigger problems that damage government efficiency in South Africa, cater deployment, BEE, sort of over-politicization, trying to do too many things at once, not focusing on the basics, are also part of the reason of how we ended up in the situation with this prison system like it is today. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And yesterday in Cape Town, at the Nyanga taxi rank, there was a protest and a suspension of taxi services for just one day or a few hours. The Cape Amalgamated Taxi Association said that after a meeting on Sunday, that on Monday its drivers would not be operating. The association said, quote, "It was not an easy decision to take, but due to safety issues, not for operators, but commuters as well, a decision was taken not to operate." They were protesting the spate of shootings that's occurred where many taxi drivers and operators have been killed recently. They said the shootings happen randomly and commuters are caught in the crossfire. This was a violation of a court-sanctioned agreement which requires taxi associations to give 36 hours notice to the municipality and the provincial government before staging any protest. They said that our plan was that operations would not be affected. The plan was to transport commuters in the morning, then march to the police station, but other circumstances came into play and a decision was taken. We do not like to make announcements this late because commuters will be affected. They marched to Nyanga Police Station to demand progress in several of these unsolved shooting incidents. They also said that they are pleading for cameras at the local taxi rank, at the Nyanga taxi rank, because if there are cameras, they said it would have been easy to identify the perpetrators. One of the incidents that they were protesting was last year when two women were killed and eight other people injured when a group of taxi owners was attacked while preparing to attend a meeting at the taxi rank. Today, the Cape Town Taxi Association came out and accused one of its own members of allegedly being a rogue member who is behind the wave of attacks on drivers. They claimed that someone operating in the Seawinds branch is responsible for the attacks. They accused this rogue member, who is not named, of extorting more than 13 million rand from other taxi drivers and carrying out some of these killings. We said now, as the CATA region, if Seawater feels now is the time, we need to challenge the cases they've already opened, then we need to take a stance that we can get attention from SAPS. Taxi services have since resumed at Nyanga. But Makone, it is endlessly sort of shocking to me just the level of violence around taxis. Every single story I've ever heard about the taxi industry involves assassinations. They are shockingly common. And so I'm not surprised that there is upset amongst drivers about this. And while maybe it would be a good idea to have some cameras at the taxi rank, I have a feeling that's not going to be enough to solve some of these deeper issues. What's your take on this story?
It's really hard to know what to make of this story. I agree with you, though, about the violence within the taxi industry. It's a big frustration to a lot of taxi commuters. In fact, one suspicion that a lot of us have had about how deeply connected these mafioso types, taxi mob types, must be, the sort of connections they must have with higher-ups in government were confirmed during the Madlanga Commission when a since-deceased taxi boss was linked to running a syndicate that, amongst other things, hires hitmen and commissions them on jobs, is connected to the likes of Cat Matlala, who is now a very notorious character. And the protection that they benefit from, you know, being closely connected to certain politicians. And so I think the reason why there really hasn't been an appetite on the part of the government to curb and address taxi violence, although there's very little political in addressing any crime in South Africa, but particularly with taxis, is that they may actually be very deeply connected to the politicians themselves. With this story in particular, the reason I say it's hard to know what to make of it is because whilst, you know, it's a very amiable cause that these taxi drivers are protesting about, they're protesting against violence, against the fact that there's been no progress update on a deadly incident that took place at one of their taxi ranks and that there's been no follow-up by the police who promised them surveillance cameras for the reasons you listed, is that there could very well be ulterior motives for why they are bringing these issues to the fore. It could be that they are settling a score with a rival taxi driver. I mean, it could be all sorts of reasons. But
it is weird that they publicly came out and sort of accused one of their own members from a particular branch of being, you know, sort of a rogue operator, which is wild.
It should raise eyebrows. I mean, surely they also put targets on their backs if this taxi driver is as rogue and violent as they claim. That seems to be one of their problems, is that he continues to be a member of the CATA, the CANTA. But it could also be that these are a handful, if one were to give them the benefit, could be that these are a handful of taxi drivers who are tired of having their livelihoods threatened and paying extortion fees to just one rogue element within the CATA, and are just fed up at how authorities within the CATA have done nothing, despite them going through legitimate means of bringing these complaints to them. So it is really difficult to know what to make of the story, but I think in due course, we will get to know what the true motivations of the story are. I do, though, support the idea of surveillance cameras at taxi ranks, not just to nip the issue of taxi gun shootings at taxi ranks in the bud, but there's all sorts of crimes that take place at taxi ranks. Sexual assault, petty crimes like, you know, theft and that sort of thing. There's all sorts of crimes that take place at taxi ranks, and surveillance cameras would put more eyes on them. And that they work and that, you know, crime detection actually happens is one thing, but I'm sure that they'd induce feelings of safety from commuters, just knowing that, you know, if something was to happen, at least we could rely on surveillance to pin the perpetrators. But I fully support that idea. I think it should be implemented countrywide.
And until the taxi industry is sort of functioning better, I think it's going to be very difficult to really solve a lot of the transport problems in South Africa, because there's sort of these often quite violent vested interests working to make sure that alternative forms of transport don't get established. And that's, you know, that's going to hold us back for a long time. So this isn't just a sort of, well, you know, it's not great, but we can live with it. It does actually, I think, have major problems for the future development of South Africa in many ways. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. Apologies if I sort of was a bit rambly, considering I don't do so well in the heat. But nevertheless, we shall be back tomorrow on the Daily Print Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a most excellent day. Bye-bye.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.